Hi, kids. Welcome to Bronco Land. We got some smart ones in the room.
Let's go for a deep dive into the AFC West with Eric Dalala. Deep dive, Dalala. I like the alliteration.
Very nice, very nice. And good to be back talking about the AFC West.
Yeah, and an interesting day. Let's start with the most dominant performance in the AFC West, other than Denver, of course. And that was from the Chiefs. Although, how much of that win was the Chiefs' defense, and how much of it was Ryan Fitzpatrick having one of the worst days any quarterback has had in recent memory?
Yeah, I mean, he said afterwards that towards the end there, you get a little bit of desperation, and that happens when you're down a lot. But 8 turnovers is pretty inexcusable, no matter how far you're down. I think the Jets had one other game that was worse than that. They turned the ball over 10 times, I think, in the 70s against the Patriots. But other than that, This is about as bad as it gets. 6 interceptions. Marcus Peters jumps on 2 more. Got the Player of the Week award, I think. And so, just a really dominant performance by the Chiefs there.
Yeah, and dominant on defense, but offensively, not much. There didn't need to be much, of course, with the amount of times that the Jets were giving the ball away. But, a little bit of a pedestrian offensive effort from the Chiefs, I thought.
Yeah, not super great. Alex Smith, 237 yards, just 1 touchdown. Didn't turn the ball over, so that's good. But like you said, they didn't mean to force 8 turnovers and only win 24-3. It almost seems like you should be winning that game by 30-plus points at that at that juncture. I was really impressed that they held Matt Forte to just 65 yards after he kind of went off on the Bills the week before, and that bodes well, I think, for the game they've got coming up this week in Pittsburgh with the return of Le'Veon Bell.
That's right, and is this a measuring stick game for Kansas City? They went down to Houston in week 2 and they struggled, but is this a game where we're really going to get an idea of what the Chiefs are and what they can be this year?
Oh, I think absolutely, and that's one of the games I'm most excited for this weekend because Pittsburgh just kind of got it handed to them against Philadelphia, and so they're going to be looking to rebound, and then you've got the Chiefs, and like you said, can they prove they're for real? I think this game in Pittsburgh will really show that. Can the defense do the same thing against a really potent Pittsburgh offense with Roethlisberger, Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell coming back? You know he's going to be ready to play. So I think we're going to learn a lot about both teams. And Chiefs, one of the immediate challengers in the division to the Broncos, but the Steelers, I mean, if you look at the AFC, you might have to go through Pittsburgh at some point to get back to the Super Bowl.
And Pittsburgh certainly is reeling, but also angry after a baffling performance, quite frankly, against the Eagles. That was not one I think anybody saw coming, maybe not even within the Eagles' walls. So the Steelers are certainly going to be out for a little redemption and to get back on the right track. And now on to the other 2-1 team in the AFC West. Of course, the Raiders, again, they're capable of better, but there were some positives for them, namely on the defense, holding the Titans to 10 points, although it must be said that the Titans had a potential game-tying drive at the end and shot themselves in the foot with 2 penalties in the red zone.
Yep, 2. One got called back, and then you've got kind of a questionable call at the end there that wasn't called on the Raiders. But yeah, they had a chance to tie it at the end, but the Raiders never trailed. They went on the road, were winning 17-3 at halftime, forced 3 turnovers. That defense is kind of back to where you might expect it to be. Jack Del Rio made a couple moves with the starting lineup, which I think helped. Rookie Carl Joseph got his first start. And David Amerson, I'm a big fan of his. I've seen him play since he was at NC State, and he just had a great game. So yeah, impressed with the Raiders. I don't think that's as easy of a game to win as some people might think. I think Tennessee is a pretty decent football team. Maybe a challenger, not this year in the AFC South, but certainly up and coming. And so I was impressed to see what they did.
Well, I love you repping the 919 in there, by the way. Thank you. But it's good to see Joseph out there. I think, I'm expecting big things for him. I loved him by far, in a way, I thought the best safety prospect in the draft. And actually, I had him mocked to the Broncos. I was a little surprised he went as high as he did coming off the torn ACL, but I thought he looked pretty good out there for his first go-round.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, the thing with that guy is he can hit somebody. He is a physical player.
He's an old-school safety. I would have loved to have seen him in the 90s.
Yeah, so I do expect big things. I think you're going to see a lot of highlight plays from him. But Oakland looked good, and now you got to go on the road play the Ravens. 3-0 there. I'm not sure how for real the Ravens are.
It's a soft 3-0. They're, you know, they haven't beaten anybody of consequence yet, and they've got a plus 13 point differential. Of course, that being said, the Broncos had a low net point differential last year, and they went all the way to the Super Bowl. So who knows? Certainly the Ravens historically are battle tested, but it's a cross country trip. It's one that on the surface you'd think would cause a lot of trouble for Oakland, but if they're going to contend, if they're going to prove that they're for real, they need a win in a situation like this.
Right, and we talked about that a couple weeks ago when they went on the road and got the win and then couldn't the following week. But, you know, I think it's important for Oakland and Kansas City. You can't drop games at this juncture with the Broncos playing the way they are. The schedule sets up for the Broncos relatively favorably over the next few weeks. And if you're Oakland and you take another loss or two and you're all of a sudden sitting three games back of the Broncos when they come to Oakland, that's not a situation the Raiders want to find themselves in.
Yeah, well, hopefully the Broncos can hold up their end of the bargain in Tampa Bay. And finally on to San Diego. And it was a tough game to figure against the Colts. I figured it was a coin flip type of game going in. And in the end, it ends up being decided on something very rare, Jason Verrett getting beaten by T.Y. Hilton for the 63-yard game-winning touchdown for the Colts.
Yeah, T.Y. Hilton kind of called his shot a little bit earlier in the week. He had not played well, certainly not lived up to the big contract that he had gotten. Mm-hmm. And he said, listen, I'm going to come out and I'm going to make a play this week. And it took him a long time to do it. He made that reception on 4th and 7 to keep the game going for the Colts. Mm-hmm. And then, like you said, that big catch and run where he kind of caught the ball across the middle, spun off a safety, and then went all the way to pay dirt. That's just, he's going to do that sometimes. Mm-hmm.
It's a very worrisome result overall for San Diego, though, because you had the Colts on the ropes, 0-2, looked like they were ahead for 0-3. And I think the most troublesome part is you've now taken Keenan Allen and Danny Woodhead out of that offense, and I think the ground game. Melvin Gordon had looked good the first couple of games, but now a little more focus on him, and it looked like he and the blockers in front of him were really struggling again with anything going, and that's a bad sign going forward, I think, for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And Phillip Rivers, I mean, he didn't throw any interceptions, but also no touchdowns. And I think they struggled a little bit. One of those touchdowns came off a fumble return for a touchdown when Andrew Luck just did a typical Andrew Luck thing where he tries to extend the play. It's just a little bit too much.
Three defensive touchdowns scored against the Colts the last 2 weeks.
Yeah. I mean, that's certainly a problem for them going forward. But I think San Diego's got to be a little bit worried about that offense. Because it's not like Colts did get a few players back, but it's still – that defense is not like the Broncos defense or other great defenses in the league. So, you know, like you said, I don't think it's an encouraging result for San Diego by any means.
It's starting to look a little bit like last year in terms of injuries at the spots where they can least afford them taking their toll. And it was, you know, they had a good game against Jacksonville in week 2. But, again, I think you have to consider the opponent. And it's going to be some tough sledding for San Diego in the next few weeks.
Yeah, got the Saints coming up next. That one's not going to be easy either. Uh-huh. So
cool. All right. Thanks for your time, Eric.
Yeah, thank you. Cool. Thanks, Mace.
Awesome. Welcome back to the DenverBroncos.com podcast. I'm Ben Hunt here with a good friend of the program, Chris Harry, and we're going to talk a little bit of fantasy. Chris, pleasure, to have you on the show today.
Ben, thanks for having me, buddy. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem, man. Let's get down to the nitty gritty. People need help with their fantasy lineups. What do you think week 4 is looking like for the fantasy player out there?
Well, it's interesting because week 4 is the first wave of the bye week. So you have the Packers and Eagles on a bye. So, you know, if you have Aaron Rodgers or Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, Eddie Lacy, you're looking for somebody to kind of fill those positions this week. And, you know, there's a few guys on the waiver wire. You start with Jordan Howard, the running back from the Chicago Bears. Jeremy Langford's out 4 to 6 weeks, and Howard was looking good before that. So he's got a matchup this week. If you can get him off waivers, Bears are playing the Lions this week. The Lions gave up 100 yards to Eddie Lacy last week. They gave up 130 yards to the combination of DeMarco Murray and Derrick Henry. So not only would I pick up Jordan Howard – you know, if you're in a position where you need to start him at a flex, it's probably a good week to do it, especially if you own one of those Packers.
Well, looking at the week with certain waiver wire picks, and obviously you like Howard a lot. Who else out there might you get out of the bargain bin there to inject immediately into your lineup if you're needing a little play for this week on those bye week guys?
Yeah, you know, I think the main guy that I've been really impressed with, and I think he's going to be a great play this week, is Cole Beasley, the wide receiver from the Dallas Cowboys. Now, we know Dez Bryant's hurt. I don't know if he's going to play Sunday or not. If he does, it'll probably be limited. But Cole Beasley, man, has led the Cowboys in targets, in receptions, and yards. He's been targeted 25 times more than anybody, including Dez Bryant on that team. Dak Prescott's doing a lot of checkdowns to him. And if Dez can't go, we're talking about a San Francisco 49ers defense this week that they shut out the Rams in week one. Since then, they've given up 83 points to the Panthers and the Seahawks. So I really like Cole Beasley this week, especially in a PPR. And then look at Terrell Pryor and what he's doing in Cleveland right now. He was doing the Wildcat. He was playing safety. He was catching a lot of balls as a receiver. This week, I don't know how the Browns plan on using him. You know, Josh Norman's on the other side, but I really do like Terrell Pryor, too. If you can get him off waivers, he's a sneaky play this week because you don't know what he's going to do, and you're going to get points for everything he does, from throwing the ball to catching the ball to running the ball. So Pryor's another sneaky play, maybe at the flex.
Well, and you mentioned it with the Cole Beasley comment. You know, there's pretty good quarterbacks out there, like Dak Prescott, a rookie quarterback still out there in many leagues, and like our own Trevor Siemian. What do you see for Prescott and Siemian potentially this weekend?
Yeah, I think both guys are great streaming options, especially for Aaron Rodgers owners. If you have Rodgers on a bye, I would strongly consider picking up a guy like Trevor Siemian. You know, we talked about this off air, but I thought that they would really rely on C.J. Anderson a lot more during the first half of the season. Game three, Trevor's throwing dimes to Sanders and Thomas, and he's got a great matchup against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Bucs are allowing almost 34 points a game. So I really like Trevor this week as a streaming play. And even if you don't play him in your league, you know, I'm sure he's a great bargain on DraftKings as well. So if you play the daily leagues, Trevor's someone you definitely want to keep your eye on. And then Kirk Cousins. I think a lot of people own Kirk Cousins. He may be kind of on the fringe there. But if he's available in your league, you want to pick him up against that Cleveland Browns defense. That's, you know, had a tough time, tough go of it. Cousins is really spreading the ball around evenly to Jordan Reed and Jameson Crowder, Deshaun Jackson, Pierre Garçon. I think he's a nice play this week as well if you're in a bind.
Well, we know who you like. You've told us all those guys, or some of those guys, rather. Who would you sit this week? If you've got a bad matchup, looking at whoever you play, who's going to have to grab some pine?
You know what? Really, Ben, this question bothers me at the beginning of the season because there's your stars that you look back and you don't want to be reactionary. I look at Kelvin Benjamin. He had two fantastic games. Then he had zero catches, 0 yards last week. And people are probably going to be fed up and say, oh, I'm going to sit Kelvin Benjamin. No, you play Kelvin Benjamin. You want to play your guys. For me, I don't know if there's anybody in particular that I want to sit that's on my lineup, especially in a week where you have two teams on a bye. So, you know, you look at the matchups and it's going to be different for everybody. You know, maybe you look at the Seattle receivers, and if Russell Wilson is banged up, maybe you want to pump the brakes on Tyler Lockett or Doug Baldwin if Russell Wilson's not going to be his 100% self. But look at the injuries throughout the league, and that's really kind of how you want to base your decision. But this early in the league, I hate when people overreact to guys not performing and, yeah, I guess sit, start. You don't have enough of a sample size to do that yet. But if it's close, look at the injuries and look at kind of the different variables throughout each matchup. But have confidence in your guys.
I think that's some good advice there, Chris. Last thing for you here, and we'll let you go. Who do you think is going to be the fantasy MVP for this week? I mean, we've seen some defenses step up over the past couple of weeks with some high scoring points. You always see a receiver here and there throwing up a 20 plus game. And then you always have some quarterbacks who are throwing the ball around. Who do you like this week as potentially the high score?
You know what? I'm gonna say Melvin Gordon. We'll keep it in the AFC West. The Chargers are welcoming the New Orleans Saints to town. 31st ranked defense. They had a heck of a time trying to stop Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman. Those guys have, I believe, it's 4 touchdowns combined, and Devontae Freeman just ran wild against them. With all the injuries that they've had on offense, the Chargers early in the season, I don't know if Gates is going to go. I think Melvin Gordon is going to be the bell cow there, and he's going to carry a lot. And I think he'll be the guy this week. You know, it's a game the Chargers need to win, and Melvin Gordon scored in every single game. He's got 4 touchdowns through 3 games, had 0 touchdowns all of last year. I think he's riding high right now, and I think he's going to keep it going against the Saints.
There's some fantasy advice from our good friend Chris Avery. Chris, thanks so much for your time. Appreciate you hopping on the podcast with us.
My pleasure, buddy.
He's like a country diva, though. I'm like Hollywood diva.
The Broncos wide receivers are a whole bunch of divas, but trust me, that's a good thing. This is Caroline Disley back with a Week 4 edition of the Sound Recap. Before Sunday's game versus the Bengals, the Broncos' top wide receiver duo were a little frustrated with not getting the football. That changed Sunday when they combined for 3 touchdowns and 217 yards in the Broncos' victory. So Sanders and DT being divas, that's a good thing.
I like winning ball games. I like catching passes. Every wide receiver in the world likes to catch passes. Every wide receiver in the world likes to put up points. You know, after that game when the defense scored 2 touchdowns and you're looking and Talib has more touchdowns and the defense is holding us down, we're looking at ourselves and saying, man, offensively we got to step it up. After every game you see the past 2 games, you go in and you see on the big board, you see a defensive player up there, and you're like, what's going on, man? You know, oh, this is a defensive-led team. No, this is a team. So we got to pick up our slack. We got to do better on offense, and that's what we're seeing, and that's what we did last week. We were able to our defense wasn't on the field at the end of the game, and we're praying, like, please make a stop. We set our objectives and said, you know, we're in control of this. We're going to go out and make the plays, and I think that that's what makes this team so unique and so special, because we have guys on the offense that want to step up and don't depend on other people. And I think it's okay for that.
If you're going to double team me, you're going to have to deal with him. You're going to double team him, you're going to have to deal with me. And that's not being cocky. It's just that, you know, we put in the work and we know what we can and what we can't do.
On the defensive side of the ball, Von Miller's having himself a good September. He leads the NFL with 5 sacks while also racking up 12 tackles, 6 quarterback hits, and 1 forced fumble. This earned him the AFC Player of the Month honors. But for him, it's just all about football.
It feels great. I mean, like I said before, it just shows you the type of, you know, team that we have, the type of organization that we have here. No fly zone, the best secondary in the National Football League. You got 2 linebackers get 3 sacks, you know, back to back. You know, most of those is covered sacks. They just showed you the type of defense that we have over here, the type of secondary that we have, the type of coaching that we have, and it's a true blessing. There's something special that's going on with this team right now, and it's great to be a part of it. Like I said, the locker room is the core of it. We got great leadership here. When we come out here to work, when we come out here to practice, we really practice, we really get it in. It's 100% football, and like, that has to be the birth of some of the success that we're getting.
However, there is one thing missing from Von's game.
Yeah, it's not the same, you know, with DeMarcus. You know, it's not the same without him in the locker room. You know, it's just, you know, he's DeMarcus Square. You know, it's just not the same. We all look up to him. You know, even Coach Pug, you know, it's just the vibe that he has in the locker room. His vision for plays, you know, his vision for tendencies and stuff. It helps us out. You know, we need him in the locker room. That's why he has to come to the locker room. You go to rehab and you come to meetings. Nothing changes. You know, nothing changes. We need you.
That's it for this week's Sound Recap. I'm Caroline Disley. Tune in next week after the Broncos beat the Bucks.
Time now for the Broncos TV edition of the podcast. Of course, this is the best part of the podcast.
By far. There's no competition.
And for the next hour, Matt Boyer and I... No, I'm just kidding. We'll try and keep this one a little bit briefer than last week's, but I'm Phil Milani with Matt Boyer. Matt, how are you doing?
Good, Phil. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. Before we get to the AFC West picks, we got a bone to pick, and it has nothing to do with sports.
You're right, it doesn't. Now set this up for the people. You and I, we go back and forth. right? In the office, we go back and forth.
We talk about a wide range of different topics because you and I are intellectuals.
Very much so. We went to two upstanding universities. We have a worldly sense of mind.
In our office, there's many leather-bound books that I've read all of them.
A lot of globes. Yes. A lot of globes.
Yes, exactly, that we study. So, we have a fine intellect on a wide variety of topics.
Yes. And so the topic that we got onto this week, Thursday, was National Coffee Day.
Yes, it was.
And
you and I both love coffee.
Absolutely. We both enjoy coffee. I have at least one cup of iced coffee a day. You partake in, how many cups a day would you say you drink?
4 to 5 cups of hot coffee.
Okay, right. And that is where the discrepancy lies, right?
Is it possible to be a connoisseur of coffee if you only drink cold coffee?
Yes.
No.
Yes, it is. All right. Make your case.
Okay. First of all, I think that there's a wide range of different types of coffee.
Okay.
Okay. On a regular day, I drink just a normal brewed hot cup of coffee.
Okay.
If I'm just relaxing and it's like a Saturday and I'm at home watching college football,
sure,
I might make myself a French press.
Very fancy.
Very fancy.
You're living large.
This last summer, I was lucky enough to go to Italy.
Yep.
Enjoyed many cups of espresso.
Espresso's great. I love espresso.
Now, if you just eliminate all of those different types of coffee,
yes,
how can you be a connoisseur if you're only stuck to the cold brew?
Well, here's why I say that. Now, every day I drink cold coffee. I cold brew it at home. I love coffee. It's one of my favorite things in this world, okay? I take such great pride in coffee that I do like to cold brew it because the cold brewing process, steeping the grounds, it is less, the coffee comes out to be less, have less acidity. So that means basically that the aromas come through more, okay? The taste comes through more. When you add acid to coffee, when you burn it, okay, that opens up the oil.
I'm not talking about burning.
Okay, all right.
Nobody's talking about burning here. All
right, let's say you're boiling coffee, okay? Right?
But okay, so if you make like a French press, you boil the water.
Right.
And then you got to let it cool just a little bit because you don't want to scald the beans or the grounds.
The more heat that you add, the hotter it is, the more oil is released, the more acids that are released, and that muddles the flavor. That's not allowing the true taste to come through, as has been identified in many, many educational,
let me ask you this.
Journals.
If you went to a diner and you're like, give me a cup of coffee, what are you going to get?
I'm going to get a hot cup of coffee.
Yeah, that's because that's what coffee is.
No. If you want to be a connoisseur, if you want to really know what the bean is supposed to taste like, you cold brew it. 12 to 24 hours, less acid, it's better on your stomach, it's better on your teeth, but it's overall healthier for you.
I enjoy cold coffee.
Okay, I do too.
I enjoy cold coffee.
And I enjoy a hot espresso.
All the coffees.
Okay, all right. If given the option, which I like to give myself options, I will come in with a cold cup of coffee because of the reasons that I just mentioned, okay? To get the true essence of the coffee, to get the true essence, Phil, you need to cold brew. Shout out to all those places around town that use the cold brew ice cubes. So you put the coffee, so you don't want to water it down.
So
you got to put the coffee in a little, ice maker overnight, let it sit, pop out the ice cubes. You got coffee ice cubes. You're not watering down the flavor. You're getting that extra
cold hit.
It's so great.
Needy.
It's so
That's
awesome.
Needy.
Now, when we go on the road, got to have my cold coffee.
Yeah, and meanwhile, like a man, I just get a cup of coffee and I'm good to go.
I will wake up 45 minutes to an hour early just to get some cold brew on the road. So if you are selling cold brew in any of our road cities, get at me.
I drink cold coffee because my wife will only drink cold coffee.
She's a smart lady. You married a smart woman, Phil.
But I enjoy hot coffee.
Should we get to the picks?
Let's get to the picks.
Right.
The first one in the AFC West, Raiders at Ravens.
You know, the Raiders last week had a tough battle in Tennessee. You know, I'm a big believer. You and I have gone back and forth about this, one of the many topics. But I feel like those cross-country plane rides really do something to some teams. I think we saw it last week with the Raiders and the Titans. The Raiders only beat a mediocre Titans team, in my opinion, by 7 points. I think the Titans are a very talented team. They're on the come up. But I think that's a game that the Raiders should have handled a little bit better than they did. I think that going back to the East Coast for the second time in 2 weeks is going to hurt their preparation just a little bit and just enough to give the Ravens the edge. I think the Ravens are a very underrated team right now. Flacco has them playing
sneaky.
Well.
Sneaky. Sneaky 3-0.
Sneaky 3-0.
I hate that term, but they are sneaky 3-0.
I got to go with the Ravens.
Yeah, I'm taking the Ravens too. Who knew they were 3-0, but they've quietly, you know, done some nice things there. Is Joe Flacco elite? Well, that's a question for... No, he's elite. I think that they get the job done over the Raiders. Moving on, Saints at Chargers.
Speaking of elite quarterbacks, Phil, we've got two of them in this one.
Ooh.
Breeze, the future,
his return.
The future Hall of Famer, coming back to San Diego where he once played his professional ball. I like the Saints in this one.
What?
Just upset pick right here, because I think that Drew Breeze is one of those guys in the mold of a Tom Brady, of a Peyton Manning, where if he's coming off of a loss, it's going to motivate him that much more to get him and his guys ready for the following
week. Why are they 0-3 then?
I think
he wasn't motivated after those other ones.
Well, I think he's going to have. I think he's Michael Thomas is playing very well. Willie Snead's also become a huge bright spot for that offense. I think if they have both of those weapons at the ready, I think they can come in and surprise the Chargers. I think I like the Saints.
Saints playing on a short week. Heading across, it's going to be an emotional game for Drew Brees. We've seen that with Peyton Manning going back to Indianapolis.
Right.
That's a tough game to play. I like the Chargers in that one. And then the final AFC West game, Chiefs at Steelers.
Well, the Steelers last week, I mean, they did now. Now, credit to Philadelphia, they played well. However,
that was a surprise game.
Steelers a little bit banged up. I think the Eagles caught him in a good spot. I think the Eagles, all credit to Carson Wentz, I think he's playing very well. Although I do think that Ben Roethlisberger is going to have Le'Veon Bell back. He's going to have Antonio Brown at the ready. I think that the Steelers are going to right the ship and handle the Chiefs pretty easily on Sunday Night Football.
Marcus Peters against Antonio Brown, that is a matchup worth seeing. That's why that game's on Sunday Night Football.
Yep.
Hopefully after the Broncos game, we'll get to catch a little bit of that. But, boy, that is going to be a great matchup. I like the Steelers at home.
Yep.
I think that they're going to bounce back after a tough game last week and show why they're the team that they were supposed to be.
This is a matchup of two playoff teams. I think that this matchup, again, these two teams, I think, are going to be right there. Of course, the Steelers not on the Broncos schedule. Of course, the Chiefs twice. We're going to see those guys once on Christmas Day, of course. So I think that this is going to be a good barometer for both these teams to see where they stack up among the elite in the NFL.
Well, hopefully it's a great Sunday of NFL football, and hopefully you're drinking a nice hot cup of coffee.
Cold brew.
As you're listening to this podcast. That's going to do it for the Broncos TV portion. For Matt Boyer, drinking some coffee?
I am. I'm going to be drinking that cold brew on the road this week.
I'm Phil Maline. That's been the best portion of this podcast.
All right, welcome back to the DenverBroncos.com podcast. Ben Swanson here with you. We have another very special guest with us, Billy Thompson, a Ring of Famer, now works with the Broncos. Billy, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing pretty well, especially sitting at 3-0. Did you watch the game?
Absolutely. I think everybody's pretty happy.
What are your thoughts on it? I mean, last week's a little bit more offensive than the defense. That's a little uncharacteristic, but what are your thoughts on the team so far?
Well, I think, you know, starting off at 3-0, they're not perfect, but they're playing great, and it's early in the season. They got a long way to go, but right now I would give them an A.
Pardon?
I would give them an A+.
Oh, an A, sorry. I thought we had lost you there.
I'm grading them.
Gotcha. Do you feel like they're more well-rounded this year? The offense struggled a little bit more last year with, you know, they had some inefficiencies with offense. That's in the first year of the system, but in the second year of it, it looks like they're doing a little bit better. They have a little bit more cohesion. Do you get a sense that maybe, though, the team lost some guys, that they're in a better shape?
Yes, you know, typically when you start, the defense is always ahead of the offense. And I think in particular this year, because we're starting with a lot of new players on offense, and particularly the quarterback position. So, you know, I'm not surprised that that they started a little slow. The defense has been together. Everybody knows each other. They got a lot of experience, and so at this point in the season, I would expect them to be a little bit ahead of the offense.
What kind of differences do you, I mean, you played in the 3-4, the Broncos play in the 3-4 now. They play in a little bit different system. What kind of differences do you notice between the kind of defense that y'all ran in the Orange Crush back in the day and the defense that they have now?
Well, there's a lot of similarities, that's for sure. The thing that stands out, I think, for me, for this particular team is that everybody is hustling to the football. Everybody's in pursuit. They're game tackling, which is incredible. Our guys were the same way. We wanted to know who was going to make the play. And it doesn't seem like they make many mistakes. And if they do, they're very, very minimal. It's a hard defense to score on, and our team was the same way. We were hard to give up seven. And they've been very impressive inside the red zone.
You know, as a former defensive back, I'm kind of interested in hearing who your favorite player to watch on this Broncos defense is.
Well, Chris Harris and Taliba, I watch all the time, you know, just kind of just watching their techniques. And they're all solid. I mean, and they communicate well together. That's the key. I think playing in the secondary, you have to communicate. You have to know down and distance and practice and the whole thing. And they play well together as a team, which is what I really look for and what I like.
Yeah. One thing that was really surprising a couple of weeks ago after the win over the Colts is that Aqib Talib, after he returned that pick for a touchdown, he became the Broncos franchise leader in pick sixes. What is it that makes him so good as a defensive back returning the ball? Why is he the best in franchise history?
Well, you know, I don't know, but after watching him run it back as he got it, you know, I'm surprised he didn't run back punts and kickoffs because the kid really, I mean, he really can, he has a lot of moves and he's pretty fast. So, and I guess it was almost where he got it too. I mean, he didn't get it and he's in a clear field. He had to sidestep and dodge some people on the way. I mean, he was incredible with it. I just like his attitude when he catches the ball. He wants to make something happen and not just make the interception. He wants to really score on the interceptions.
Yeah, it's kind of – I mean, he has an offensive background from his days at in high school in Kansas. He played a little bit of wide receiver. So I guess he kind of retains those instincts even though he's playing strictly on defense ever since he's came in the league. I don't know if he's ever returned a punt or a kick in a game, but – it seems like he has those same kind of qualities that would make him successful at it.
Well, without a doubt. I mean, you can see it. I noticed it, you know, right away when he was coming back after he picked it off. I was wondering why he hadn't been back running punts kickoff because he's very elusive and very impressive.
And then the final question here is that it's one that's kind of been following the team ever since the Super Bowl, and that's how you make the defense better than it was last year, and something that kind of has a parallel is that the defense in 1977, the famous Orange Crush, like the first Super Bowl that the Broncos went to, obviously that was a great defense, but the one that kind of gets lost after that is the year after that, where the defense was even better, gave up fewer points, gave up fewer passing touchdowns, had more interceptions, more turnovers. How did y'all become a better defense in that year after?
Well, I think playing defense, you have to focus, and the goals are set. You know, we went into every game trying to hold the opponent to 13 points or less. That was our goal. And we had pretty high goals back then, and I think they have high goals now, because I think playing defense is the basic of winning. If you've got a great, great defense, you can go a long way in this league and any league, I tell you that.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us on the podcast, Billy Thompson, everyone. Thanks, Billy. I'm sure we'll be in touch, and we'll have you back on here before too long.
Well, great. I really enjoyed it, and go Broncos.